Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnegat Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. We're talking to Bob Feller, Hall of Fame baseball player, known as Rapid Robert and Bullet Bob for his 100-mile-an-hour-plus fastball. You were clocked right after the war when they finally had radar. How fast was your fastball, Bob?
Well, they clocked me. It was a full electric cell devices from the Aberdeen Ordnance Plant, Aberdeen, Maryland. They call it the Proving Grounds, Military Proving Grounds. They checked in 1946 in Washington, D.C. with that equipment. It was 107.9, and that was, of course, you couldn't maintain that during a game. Maybe you could maintain 103 to 105 on a good day, or maybe a little better occasionally, but I had a good curveball. But a fastball has to have some movement on it. If it doesn't have movement on it, no matter how hard you throw it, it's not going to fool the hitter. You have to have some movement on the ball.
And did yours move?
Everybody, Americans all like speed, and the speed, of course, is important. And control has to have a big – control is a big factor also.
And that was one thing that you were known as, for getting a little wild every now and then. Do you think that helped you with the strikeouts? I mean, who
would... Almost all fastball pitchers have a little wildness. You have a big windup, and you have a lot of motion, and you have a lot of leg action. And it's, you can't be a dart thrower out there when you're throwing real hard, using an awful lot of body strength to propel the baseball. So most fastball pitchers walk quite a few hitters, and they foul off a lot of them, and I was right amongst them and throwing, walking a lot of hitters when I first came up. And after I gained my control, it was much easier and made the game much easier for me. But
I imagine as a batter, I wouldn't want to dig in too much if somebody.
Well, those were the days before they had helmets, and of course the batters were a little bit apprehensive and maybe a little bit afraid of some of the wildness of some of the pitchers. But
with good cause.
If you don't have a helmet on, you're going to be a little bit loose up there at the plate. You got some wild guy out there on the mound, but it did help probably indirectly.
I remember one Detroit Tiger game when they were playing against Nolan Ryan. Gates Brown was a great hitter, became a batting coach afterwards. He got up against Ryan and he struck out, and he was walking past Jim Northrop, who was going up next. Northrop asked him, "How's he throwing?" And Gator said, "Don't go up there." So. You were compared.
Well, those are jokes.
Right. But you were compared to Nolan Ryan.
You hear all those rainy day stories everywhere, and they may be true and they may not be, but it's possible. There's a lot of funny things happen in the game. Baseball is a game of inches. Either fair or foul or ball or strike, et cetera, et cetera. And almost all sports are games of inches, and there's a lot of luck involved in professional sports as well as amateur. And if you're lucky, in a lot of cases, you're going to have a better career. And some days you're lucky and some days you're not. And you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. And you have to be able to accept that, because you have to give the other fellows some credit. Give the other fellows some credit also.
They're all pros. The some players played against you and also played against Ryan. Have you ever heard any of them make any comparisons?
Say what?
Some batters batted against you, and they also batted against Nolan Ryan. Have you ever heard of any of them making a comparison?
I don't. I would not know of any hitter that ever hit against me in my prime and ever hit against Nolan Ryan. I don't think that's possible, and I'm not going to buy that at all.
Okay.
I don't think that's true.
I'm going to scratch.
Whoever said that, I don't think knew when our career started and ended.
It was on the internet on one of the stories about you. Let's go back to the military then. You had a great career in the military. Your ship was awarded battle stars, and as you would get them too. How proud of you? Have I already asked you that about the?
Well, I'm satisfied with my decision I made on December 7th to join the Navy. I had planned on joining the Navy back in 1939. I knew we were going to be in the war, just a matter of when. And I came in as a chief petty officer and went right on into training at Newport, Rhode Island, and then aboard the Alabama. I was always a chief from the day one when I swore in. And that was what Gene Tunney, the director of the athletic department of the Navy, gave me, and because of my enlistment. And I was in the Navy 4 years and 2 days as far as, even though I was on inactive duty for 2.5 months, just when the war was over late August 1945, went back to Cleveland and continued my career, and I had my best year in my career, and the next year, 1946, was my best year.
Just out of curiosity, what did a chief petty officer make in those days? Do you recall?
Well, I think we got about $80-some a month, and then, of course, sea pay and combat duty, you probably got about double in the 160s, perhaps, per month. But
that was about what I was...
Nobody thought about that. We had unrelenting resolve that we were going to have to win the war.
Right. I mean, that's about what I was making.
That was a war that had to be won, otherwise it was Hitler, and the Axis would have dominated the world, and... we had a war that was a war that we had not only in the military but at home, in the factories and on the farms and all over the United States. We had unrelenting resolve. We're going to win it, and they helped. Cooperation, and everybody had, we had good leadership in the military as well as politically, and in every way we had great leadership in those days. That's why we won the war.
And the people tend to think, okay, we saved the United States. I mean, it was truly saving the world. There's a lot of countries that are free today because of what you guys did in World War II.
Well, actually, the United States won that war for the rest of the world. It hadn't been for the United States, that war would have been lost, and we all know that.
I have several Australian friends who are Vietnam veterans who say the same thing that you just said.
I was in Vietnam in 1969 with General Creighton Abrams, and also with General William Yarbrough, head of the Green Berets. I spent several months over there visiting the fire bases and the pacification centers and flying the Huey helicopters all over the country, all the way from Da Nang down to the Mekong Delta. I was there. I saw what was going on over there, and it was when President Johnson was there, and McNamara was head of the Defense Department. We could have won that war if they'd have let them. They just wouldn't. They just wouldn't let General Abrams do what he wanted to do. Neither he nor Westmoreland, and the two bombed the supply ships up in Hanoi. If they'd have bombed the supply ships, they could have won that war. But they wouldn't let them do it.
It's hard to win a war when you're afraid somebody's going to get mad at you for it.
They had their hands tied behind their back. That was a problem.
One of the partners here on Veterans Radio is Dale Thronberry, who was a helicopter pilot at the same time that you were there. Dale, would you like to say hi to Bob Feller?
Hi, Mr. Feller. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Everybody knew that was a war, that they didn't want to win it. They were afraid of the Chinese or whatever. I don't know what they were afraid of, but it was a lot of bad judgment in Washington is the one that caused it to lose that war. If we lost it, which I think we did, and because we had lost over 50,000 men over there dead. What a waste of not being able to win.
Mr. Feller, this is Dale Thronberry. I'm one of the other sponsors on, or the other speakers on Veterans Radio, and I wanted to ask you about some of the other ball players that were with you during World War II that you can remember. And we're old enough in here to remember you and Ted Williams and some of the other players. And I was wondering if you could tell us about some of the other ball players that were in World War II.
Well, a lot of ball players, a lot of minor leaguers as well as major leaguers, and there's about two or three major leaguers got killed in World War II in the combat. Ted Williams did not get into combat in World War II. He, He and his squadron with John Glenn got to Honolulu. The war was over. They never were in combat. They got in combat in Korea, where Ted threw 39 missions. And Lew Brissy was in combat in Europe, and so was many others, including Warren Spahn and other lesser known names were in the Battle of the Bulge, or in Italy, or in France, and in on the beaches over there when they invaded, and in the Navy, of course, in the Pacific. But I know Elmer Gideon got killed in the war. He was from Cleveland, Ohio. He was playing for Washington, D.C. Harry O'Neill played for Baltimore and got killed.
We're coming up to a break. Our last break.
This is the last. I'm not going to go through any more breaks. I'm all through with you.
Could you hang on then for just a few minutes?
I'm not going to go any longer.
Okay. Well, Bob Feller, Hall of Fame pitcher. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.